This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
8 o'clock hour here on 105.3 The Fan. I'm RJ Choppy. He is Bobby Belt.
Got you down.
Peyton and Aiden alongside your hump day edition of Sean and RJ.
Hump day.
On The Fan here. We got Adam Schefter coming up at 9 o'clock. Brett Boone at 9:20. Big night tonight. Got Luka in town taking on the Mavs. And we got the Rangers coming up 12:30 pregame right here on The Fan. KNC's got a short show today.
Oh, you're kidding.
Try to
no
avoid
way.
The sweep.
A short show. That's so awesome for them. But we've got the best guest of the day. Some have referred to him as the next Kyle Yeomans. It's Dane Brugler from The Athletic, here to talk about the Beast, his annual draft guide. Dane, how are you, sir?
I've been called worse. hey, guys. Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing great. Excited that the Beast is here. Dude, first off, before we get into the actual content or some of these draft questions, it is so sleek and stylized looking this year. You got like all the different like graphics and such a clean new look and all the different things with it. You've still got the regular printed version I see available, but it looks like you guys have tricked it up this year.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to still honor the people who like to print it out and have a physical copy and, you know, go with the straight PDF. But, you know, it's 2025. Let's upgrade this thing. And yeah, it's the navigation's really easy. You can search. There's over 2,600 players in this thing. Mm. So you can search for anybody you want. There's testing information for all of them. 400 reports, you know, all the background information that you're just not going to get anywhere else. So yeah, if you like the draft at all, I promise you will not be disappointed. Check out the Beast. Make sure you have it by your side when the Cowboys are drafting here in a few weeks, and you'll have everything you need to know about the player.
So let's start with the Cowboys first. And Dane Brugler from The Athletic joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. His annual draft guide is out now. It is a must for everybody. We're going to have it here in the studio, I know, for the next few weeks. Dane, let's start with Cowboys first before we get to some larger draft questions. The name we keep hearing a lot in mock drafts and things like that, I don't know how much it's coming from the Star, but just people connecting dots. They keep mocking Omarion Hampton, the North Carolina running back at 12. I've been feeling like that's a little rich. I really, if I'm picking at 12 and I'm getting a running back, I'd probably want Genty as the only one I'd go for, but he's likely not to be there at this point. Is Hampton a guy that you think you could justify and say, I understand if the Cowboys were to go with him at 12, I understand why they would make that pick?
It would. I fall along with kind of where you're thinking. It feels rich. I mean, Omarion Hampton is a really good player. It's maybe the best compliment you can give is, yeah, okay, last year in 2023 with Drake May, ran for over 1,500 yards, almost 6 yards a carry. But without Drake May this past year, everybody knew Omarion Hampton was getting the ball. They don't have a quarterback. The offense really revolved around the run game. He still rushed for over 1,600 yards, 6 yards a carry, 15 touchdowns. So, you know, regardless of what the blocking was, what the quarterback was doing, Omarion Hampton was productive, and he does it in different ways. He has the traditional build that you want from a running back, 6 foot, 220 pounds. He brings a power element, but he also has speed. He has above average burst for a guy that size. So he's a proven workhorse. And so there's a lot of things to like about him. I think Hampton will be a first round pick, But especially in a draft class like this that is so deep at the running back position, I think of the different ways they could go with that 12th pick, and I think a wide receiver, defensive lineman, maybe even a corner. To me, that makes a lot more sense in the first round, and then wait until day two and get my Caleb Johnson, get RJ Harvey. There's just so many running backs in this class that I think can help upgrade this team's running game, and they can get a better player there at 12 overall.
So your number one position at 12 would be?
Well, and I think that, and then the Cowboys don't really, they don't really draft positions in the top 15, right? I think they target players more so than positions.
Right.
And really, I mean, the Cowboys deserve a ton of credit for how they've drafted the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years when they've had a top 15 pick, top 20 pick. They haven't let it go to waste. You know, they've gone and got the CD Lambs and the Zach Martins, and, you know, they've really maximized those early picks. And so when I look at that 12th overall pick, I think you could make an argument that assuming all receivers are available at that point, whether they go with McMillan from Arizona, Matt Golden from Texas, I mean, they could really upgrade and make an upgrade in the passing game. I think that makes a lot of sense. We know they need to get better on the defensive line, and so they could upgrade there as well, whether it's, you know, could be a pass rusher like a Mike Green, it could be a defensive tackle, and we know they need corner help. So to me, the position I keep coming back to is wide receiver. This is a different wide receiver group than last year. There's no Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr. If Brian Thomas, who went in the 20s last year, if he were in this draft class, he would be the first receiver drafted. So it's not necessarily a super strong receiver group, but there's still talent. There's still good players. And in my opinion, McMillan is the best of the group, flexible. He's ball winning instincts. That's what really stands out the most with him. When the ball's in the air, he's going to go get it and come down with it. You rarely see the ball hit his body, get to his body, because he's catching everything out in front with his hands. So if I have a chance to go get McMillan, if I'm the Cowboys, I think that makes a ton of sense.
You know, on McMillan, and we're talking with Dane Brugler here on 105 Through the Fan, his new annual draft guide is out now over at The Athletic. You can pick up a copy with your Athletic subscription. Dane, with McMillan and the questions about his 40 time and how fast he is, does that matter as much when you look at least for me, when I watch McMillan, I see a guy who's very efficient with his movements, and there's not a whole lot of wasted steps for me. So I look at it and I go like, yeah, it may be 4.55 or whatever it is, but to me that's still a really efficient mover when he's out there working in space.
Yeah, no doubt. He's a very limber athlete, and he actually ranked third in among receivers in all of college football last year in forced missed tackles after the catch. So he's got a little bit of slipperiness to him. Massive catch radius. That's really, I mean, that's the reason you want to draft him, is the catch radius. It's really unique. It's kind of T. Higgins-esque. And, you know, T. Higgins ran, I think, a 4.59 at the combine when he was coming out. Like, he wasn't a big speed guy. And honestly, usually these guys aren't really for me. I think of like Laquan Treadwell and N'Keal Harry, and like we've seen a lot of those guys who were quote unquote ball winners but maybe didn't have the separation skills. We've seen those guys not work, but I think McMillan is a little bit different because of what you're saying. He has just this flexibility and fluidity to him in his routes at the catch point, where he's just going to be those ball winning instincts really take over. So a unique playmaker who still has to get a little bit better in terms of sharpening that, some of his routes, expanding the route tree. You know, that Arizona offense kind of limited him in that area, but all the tools are there for him to be a ball winner in the NFL.
Grady Jenkins over on the Fan YouTube complimenting Dane Brugler for the Denton Ryan helmet that is on his setup behind him there on the Fan.
I was wondering if that was Denton Ryan or Mount Union.
Could it be Mount Union? Is it Mount Union or Denton Ryan?
It is Mount Union.
Look at that.
You didn't tell me. You're telling Grady Jenkins.
Oh, look at that.
See, you would know because you're playing Denton Ryan today, actually.
Yes. My kids are playing Denton Ryan today.
Dane, I got to ask you, let's talk local since we're already we're mentioning local here. What do you think of, and we'll go quarterback first, Quinn Ewers? So I have talked to various people who, you know, some people think like, man, the traits are there, and that's a guy who I'd absolutely be willing to gamble on, or, oh, that's a guy I would gladly take in the second round. And then there are other people I've heard from that are just like, that's an easy late day three pick to me. It just feels like there's a lot of variance on Ewers.
There really is. And I think you could make that case for a lot of these quarterbacks, especially in the mid rounds, you know, the Dillon Gabriels, the Will Howards, Riley Leonards, all those guys. It's a wide range of opinions. And with Ewers, you know, I think there's a lot of things that you can point to and say, okay, yeah, that's going to work at the next level. I mean, he's a natural ball handler. The ball comes out really quick, especially RPOs, really, really smooth in the RPO game. You know, he's a really good curl comeback passer. He has a good feel for areas. I think the most impressive thing about him is the poise that he plays with. And you look at some of the places he's played, 2023 Alabama, 2024 Michigan, like the true road games, that's where he's at his best. He's a very calm guy. He doesn't get affected by crowd noise. And you know, in true road games at Texas, he was 11-1 as a starter. So I think that mental toughness, that poise is something that you can really look to and say, all right, that'll translate to the next level. I want to see him stay healthy. I want to see him be able to stay on the field. And, you know, I give him credit for toughing out some of those injuries last year, but it clearly affected him. And you have to be able to play through pain and still execute and still maintain your level of being a consistent starter. And so can he do that at the next level? That's kind of the question mark. When it's all said and done, I think there's a good chance he does go on day two for a team that's looking for one of these quarterbacks, second round, third round. You know, we'll see how the first round plays out. You know, obviously we think the Titans are drafting a quarterback at one. What do the Saints do at nine? Could they be a Shedeur Sanders landing spot? What about Jackson Dart? What do the Steelers do at 21? And we know the Browns and the Giants there at the top of round two need quarterbacks. So it's just a really interesting, you know, kind of domino effect of when these quarterbacks come off the board and then who's still going to be looking for a quarterback once we get to day two.
You would be surprised, or you'd be stunned by how many quarterbacks made it in the first round. What's the number that would stun you?
Well, I mean, I think the over-under is 2.5, and I'm going to take the over on that just because, you know, usually we see these guys go. You know, the Kenny Pickett year was kind of the exception to the rule. We had one quarterback in the top 73. I do think this quarterback class is more similar to that quarterback class than, say, last year where we had six in the top 12. But, you know, we could always see one of these teams, the Browns, the Giants, the Raiders, who knows, maybe trade up into the back half of round one to get one of these quarterbacks, because this is a good draft, but it's not a great draft. And so I think some of those teams in the late 20s, they'll be more than willing to trade out of there and pick up an extra third or whatever it may be to go back to pick 33 and still feel like they're getting a similar player they would have taken at 25. So there's a good chance we see some of those trades into the late first. And so I think we're going to see three quarterbacks, maybe four in the first round.
How do you bake into your mocks and big boards and stuff the philosophy that, like, if I don't have a quarterback, I just got to take one, it's worth the risk of missing,
right?
Like, how does that kind of impact how you stack your board?
Yeah, and that's where I try to keep the mocks and the boards separate. You know, the mocks are what I think teams are going to do and what I'm hearing. The board is what how I see these guys and my scouting. And, you know, for me, Shedeur Sanders, I think, is 34 overall on my top 100 board. And that's where, you know, once we get to the late 20s, early 30s, like, that's where I would feel comfortable drafting Shedeur Sanders. I like Shedeur Sanders. I think he has a chance to be a starter in this league. I just wouldn't draft him top five overall. And on draft night, if the Giants end up taking him at third overall, yeah, that'd be a little rich for what I would do. But I get it. I understand. You know, there's a quarterback tax, right, where these guys get bumped up a little bit and go a little bit earlier than they should because of just the impact that they make. And so it's hard to rank quarterbacks with every other position because they're just different. The way they impact the game, the way that teams will reach on these guys, and you understand why. Because if you don't have a quarterback, you're in trouble. And so if you believe in a player, you understand why they might reach on them a little bit.
Last one for you here. We're talking with Dane Brugler here from The Athletic with his draft guide out released today. Your 12th ranked player is Tetteroa McMillan. Your 44th ranked player is Caleb Johnson. Those are the Cowboys picks, obviously. Would you say that's pretty close to a dream scenario for the Cowboys to get out of? Or who would you say 12 and 44, if the Cowboys could get that, I think they'd be sitting pretty.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, talk about what your offense looks like. You're upgrading your offense. That would do it. I like the McMillan pick in the first round. And then, yeah, in the second round, one of those running backs, whether it's Caleb Johnson from Iowa or Travion Henderson from Ohio State or Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State, I think they will have a few options there in round two, guys that can come in and help the run game, help in the pass game. And you think about what that will do for Dak, what that will do for CD, what that does for your entire offense. When you add two more threats, one in the backfield, one on the outside, I think that is an ideal scenario that helps them not only for 2024, but you think about the next 3 or 4 years where the Cowboys are kind of in this window with an established quarterback running the show.
Dane Brugler does great work for The Athletic, and he is also one of the kindest guys you'll ever meet, one of the best dudes in this business. Dane, we appreciate you, man, and everybody go get your copy of The Beast over at The Athletic.
Thank you, guys. Anytime.
Dane Brugler, again, he does fantastic stuff, and I've already been combing through The Beast. I'm excited about it. With us talking to Dane Brugler, it is a good time to remind you guys that our staple draft event with you, the Tolo, Draft 101, it's coming up. It's in our fan showroom, 4131 North Central Expressway in Dallas. It's going to be our Super Bowl winning scout, Brian Broaddus, Zach Wolchuk, myself. We're going to team up with DallasCowboys.com for a night of draft talk, debate, and questions. Not only that, we're going to have dinner for you guys thanks to Whataburger, plus plenty of giveaways. Completely free, no sign-up required. Just show up on April 17th. That's April 17th. Doors open at 6:45. Can't wait to see you for Draft 101 on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan.
A Stars lose in the worst way possible. The Rangers drop more than just a game. And surprise, surprise, there's controversy at the Masters. That's all coming up next in The Fan.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, DFW. Sean and RJ here, 105 through The Fan. Adam Schefter coming up at 9 o'clock. Brett Boone an hour from now at 9:20. Big time guest day here on this hump day edition.
Hump day?
I'm Sean and RJ at 105 through The Fan. I'm RJ Choppy, Bobby Belt, Peyton, and Aiden alongside. Rangers with a tough loss in Chicago. Get that in the second. But the Dallas Stars, man, the quest for the one seed in the West. They got down to 3 points a couple of days ago. Winnipeg, you know, pulled ahead by 5 going into last night. Stars could have picked up the full 2 points. But they get down to 4 because this all happened in the final freaking minute.
Stolen, Marcus Pettersson, and scored by the Canucks. Fed to Garland. Delays, center shot, score by Pugh Suter. It's a one-goal game, 28.4 seconds to play. They jam for it, it pops free. Along the wall for Garland, to the left wing side, Hughes, shot just wide, rebound in front, they scored! Vancouver has tied it! 5.2 seconds left! Check away by Harley. He then gets knocked down. Play goes on and scored by Sherwood. After Harley was taken down behind the net, Kiefer Sherwood completes one of the most improbable comebacks you'll ever see.
I can't believe this just happened.
Victory plus with the call, a devastating loss for the Stars. They were at 5-2 final minute. First team in NHL history to blow a 3-goal lead in the final minute.
Yeah.
First team in NFL history to score an empty netter up 2.
NHL history, yes.
What did I say?
NFL.
Yeah. I don't know where that came from. Probably because on the TV, it's football.
Yeah, you score an empty netter to go up three and lose the game. First time that's happened.
Never happened. Fresh Spits and Suds podcast on the Odyssey app will detail all this if you dare. Holy cow.
I'm just trying to see, like, what was this? So this was...
This is a put it out of your misery game. Put this game out of your memory.
They had a 99.99% chance of winning at the 1 minute and 1 second mark.
The nerds would call that a non-zero chance.
After the first goal, the odds, according to MoneyPuck, 99.67.
Reitma was there. He was at the game.
After the second goal, 98.91% chance.
98.91 after the second goal?
Uh-huh. And then after the tie goal, then that brought it to... it doesn't have that one listed here, but it was... It brought it down to a 51% chance after the tie.
God. Reitma, what was that? Did you stick around for the end, or did you bolt to try to beat the
traffic?
No,
I wanted to hear the post game because I was trying
to... So you stuck around. You didn't think about leaving at 5-2.
No. I was going to the post game because usually, you know, Pete DeBoer is awesome post game, and he was good to his credit. But you walk into that dressing room post game, you could hear a pin drop. I mean, it was silent. And obviously, I was trying not to be a prisoner of the moment. But after that second goal to make it a one goal game with 10 seconds left, you start looking around like, is this going to happen? Is this really going to happen? And sure enough, it did.
I still can't believe it.
No, like, you were getting home. You'd finished watching baseball, and you're like, "Well, should I check it on Saturday?" Like, they're up three.
They're up three. It's like 90 seconds left. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah,
they're up three.
Anytime you get a first in league history, you know it's obviously monumental. But just and I know the 99% thing, but it's just unfathomable to think of a team scoring three goals in a minute after you just put in an empty netter to go up three.
You got Winnipeg
five in the period. You gave a five in the period.
Yeah, that's another good point. Yeah, it was 3-0 after two periods. And Pete DeBoer said this post game, they played so well for 40 minutes and did so many things right that this is obviously going to be the cloud over it. But a 3-for-3 on the power play and just connecting in a number of different ways where you felt like the previous two losses, the sting had gone away. Because don't make no mistake about it, in those two games as well, they had given up third period leads.
And not only was it 3-0 after two, they also added two in the third period.
Yeah, because
like, it's not like it was 3-0 after two and they stopped scoring.
Right. Because Vancouver scored two to make it a one-goal game, and that's when it got a little tense. You could feel that. And then a couple of goals, Maverick Bork scored, and you're thinking, all right, here we go. And I mean, 5-2 with a minute left. I was walking home last night thinking, this is the type of game you'll tell your future kids about, future grandkids. And anytime you're watching NHL highlights and say, you know, this game happened in 2025, you say, I was there.
Not for
the right reasons.
Not for the right reasons.
Yeah.
So unless you're cheering for Vancouver.
Yeah, unless you're cheering for Vancouver. Yeah.
Which, by the way, it should be noted, like, they are as desperate of a team as you'll find because they're trying to claw their way into the playoffs, and they played like it.
But, I mean, the Stars had a chance to, you know, because they got Winnipeg tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, if they had won this game, I mean, that Winnipeg game would have been for potentially the overall. I mean, because they would still have been a point back if they had won it still. But... that'd have been tough.
Like, you never
like if they had won last night and beat Winnipeg tomorrow, they'd be like a point back.
You never want to lose to the 51st state. That's a drag.
Oh, I see right what you're there, saying you know? There. Wow, so. Very nice, interesting.
Yeah, just as long as they don't win a Stanley Cup, we keep that streak.
Yeah,
going.
That streak, what, 93? Yeah, it's a long streak.
It's been
going.
A while.
It's been a while. Ugh. It's been a while. Rangers lose. Thank you, Reitma. Rangers fall to the Cubbies out at Wrigley last night. Game today is at 1:20. Pregame is at 12:30 as the Rangers try to avoid the sweep. But the Bats did get going. They just couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah, I mean, look, it was they got up 2-0, similar to the Stars last night. They got up 2-0, fell behind, clawed their way back after being down 6-3, and after they get in there and get it up to 6-6, then they go in there in the bottom of the eighth inning and just melt down defensively with the four unearned runs allowed there. So, I mean, just bad night of pitching, bad night, you know, with the gloves on the infield and... just it's nothing syncing up in these first couple games here. For
it was a
Rangers.
Sloppy game. I mean, the Cubs, Suzuki had a boneheaded base running gaffe where he didn't know how many outs there were, and that wound up costing them when the Rangers tied it up. And then, you know, Leody wearing his hoodie out there in center field like a 11-year-old, not being able to get that fly ball, overrunning it, and the wind bringing it back. It's a tough day.
Somebody on the fan text, or actually on the YouTube earlier, had said that I was being too hard earlier today on Marcus Semien. Said that I needed to turn more of my aggression towards Leody. Here's the difference. I don't expect Leody to be like a big time difference maker with this baseball team.
Well,
like,
should you expect Marcus at this stage of his career with his age and his obvious diminishing skills?
This decline has been too sharp. I expect a decline. This has been really sharp the last 2 years, or what looks like the last 2 years. It's very early in the season, obviously, but last year was bad. And I mean, for him to start off this year with a negative wins above replacement is really, really rough.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough to watch. I mean, it really is. But I think that's kind of where we are with him. But it was 6-6, and then all of a sudden the wheels came off. Josh Jung couldn't grab the liner or the hard grounder to third, bounced off his shoulder. That could have been a double play.
Yeah, he showed up at the plate, though.
He did. He had a triple. Young. Boy, that's a weird ballpark, man. That might be a... The Rangers had two hits down the line.
Two hits.
Leody had one down the left field line where it looked like the left fielder had to kind of pull up because he was going to run into the wall. There is no room. There is no foul territory down the lines there. It's crazy. It basically the chuck
almost bracket,
touches. The chuck. Yeah, the chuck almost touches the wall. And then Tucker had the same problem down the right field line in the eighth inning on the Young triple.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a crazy play.
Plays funny a little bit. Wyatt Langford, though, we're still waiting on he's getting an MRI today. He had to leave the game with some side tightness. He said he was not overly concerned, but now we just kind of sit back and wait for another Ranger injury.
Yeah, we do. You shouldn't say it like that, but that's the reality. I mean, you know, it's especially early on in the year, you get muscle tight, muscle pulls. I'm not worried about Wyatt. I think that was a lot of it had to do with the cold. And it's been cold. And a little bit of rain today in the forecast up there.
Yep. There's a little bit of a question of whether or not they're going to get the game in today. So we'll have to see.
All right. So the Masters starts here in 24 hours.
Ugh.
Tomorrow, what?
It's just the most full of itself event that exists in professional sports.
It's absolutely full of itself, but rightfully so from their perspective. They are the...
Oh, I know.
From their perspective.
They view themselves as superior in a lot of ways.
Quite highly, yes.
Yeah.
Quite highly. So, Angel Cabrera is playing in this. Now, Angel Cabrera won the Masters in 2009. He beat my good friend Chad Campbell in a playoff.
Ah.
Kenny Perry was in that playoff as well. But he won the playoff. And he is playing in this. But Angel is a unique story. Angel is recently out of prison.
For?
Stalking, threatening, and domestic violence.
Oh. Well, I mean, given the Masters history, I would assume they don't think any of those are crimes.
Probably not. If I read right, I think he, I don't even want to say, but it had something to do with, holding someone captive in a closet, but, it was bad. It was bad. Bad, bad, bad. He spent 30 months in an Argentina jail.
Mm-hmm.
30 months. He's back. He's older. He doesn't have really a chance to win. He just won a tournament in the senior tour event. But because he's a former champ, you get a lifetime exemption to play in this. You get to play in this every year for the rest of your life as long as you decide that you're going to keep playing. The moment you retire, you gotta hang it up. But people are up in arms that he is going to be playing in it this year. And this is going to be the story that takes over this tournament over the first day. Probably won't happen after that because he's not going to be in contention, most likely. Although if you play well here, you generally play well here into your 50s and 60s. But because there's a lot of people saying he does not deserve to be in this, he shouldn't be playing in this, that they should rescind his lifetime invitation. And look, whether you think that or not, and whether that is true or not, that is absolutely not how Augusta National operates.
I mean, I would think that the only reason they might rescind it is because his last name's Cabrera, and that's more why
they would rescind it.
That's more in line with the Augusta history.
At the end of the day, and I said this with any athlete that who comes back, who's gone to prison or has been charged with something and they're cleared, either they are out of prison or the courts say they can't, they're not going to press charges or continue. If they say you're free, to me, you're free.
Yeah, but you lose certain things when you commit felonies, for instance.
You do.
So, I mean, this is one of those things where you may lose it.
You could. They don't do that.
No.
They don't do that.
As we've established, they operate and differently.
You know, most sports don't do that.
Yeah, not
like Michael Vick was allowed to come back and play.
Right, but I mean Ray Rice was not.
No.
So I mean it just kind of depends.
That was more of a blacklist, like an unofficial.
Well, yeah.
Right, that was an unofficial banning. Kaepernick, Trevor Bauer, you know, those were never official. Kaepernick they were just kind of unofficial.
Kaepernick was a controversy. Kaepernick didn't create it. Like,
No. But I'm just saying, like leagues have blacklisted players before.
Sure.
You know, shadow banned.
Yeah.
They've shadow banned.
By the way, I loved a bit I saw on TikTok the other day. These teenagers called Augusta, and they were trying to get a tee time this week.
That's great.
And they were like, no, you can't get that. They're like, well, isn't this just the golf course around there? And the lady got really annoyed and hung up.
I think that's like 5 years old.
No, it was a new one today.
There was a new one today?
Yeah, it was like yesterday or whatever.
I like it. What's coming up next on Below the Belt?
It is almost never sunshine and lollipops, but it's also almost never a nightmare. Getting real about some draft scenarios Cowboys fans might be worried about next in Below the Belt on The Fan.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
Let me make you feel better about your nightmare scenarios, Cowboys fans. But I think it's important, Chop. Here's the thing. When we have certain, I always try and change things up a little bit. When we've got a certain topic or aspect that's really upsetting Cowboys fans, not because I'm arguing in favor of it. It's just like, for instance, when the Schottenheimer happened, when the Schottenheimer hire happened, there was a lot of discussion about there is literally nothing redeeming about him as a candidate. There's nothing good about this. Is an awful thing.
Interesting you said candidate and not candidate.
I don't know why I did. I don't know if I normally say it that way or not.
Continue.
I hadn't thought about it. Anyway, the emphasis like being put on, basically it's people are upset about the hire, maybe rightfully so, but then they strip away all potential redeeming qualities. So then you come back and you go, all right, well, there are these things, X, Y, Z, like these things matter. 1, 2, 3, we're going to list those off. Those matter, and that's why he was considered a candidate. But yeah, the process wasn't the right way. Maybe you still don't think he was the best candidate. Like, there are all those things that can exist. But there too often seems to be this reaction to just strip away anything that's potentially good about it. Or anything that potentially works in their favor. In favor of that. Now, on the other side of that, you also don't want to just fluff it all up and ignore all the flaws. So, today, we're going to take three situations that I've seen Cowboys fans get upset about. Get a little worked up about that could potentially happen in the draft. And I'm just going to list the things that I think are potentially good about it. Some of these I'm not in favor of, but some things that I think are good about it or positive about it. And then some of the stuff that, like, this is also the reality of it. This is what you're, all right, this is what you're dealing with. This is a concern. Before we do that,
hit me with it. Oh,
Rowdy has lost his number.
Really?
DeMarvian Overshown has officially changed his jersey. He is Agent Zero once again.
Oh, baby.
Now, here's my question. Do you think if he doesn't get hurt, they give him the zero? Or do you think they're just like, oh, we feel kind of bad. Here's you can have zero.
There's a joke. I don't want to say it.
Yeah, probably not. but either way, I wonder if they like.
No, I don't think it's anything to do with it.
I wonder if there is a little bit of just
you
like.
You think they feel bad for him?
No, I just wonder if it's a little bit like they love his character and the way that he works. And so I just wonder if it's a little bit like. You know what? He's earned this. He's so tough, and he's about to go through another. Let's give him this.
So what number is Rowdy going to wear?
I don't know. Does Rowdy need a number?
Yeah.
Why?
He's Rowdy. He's in uniform.
I don't think he needs one.
I think he does. I think he just sticks with number zero. He sticks with zero. There's no rule against it. He's known as zero. He's been here before. He'll be here after.
I mean, he could just be double zero.
Well, then until Mike.
But I mean, that's Greg Oster tags.
Yeah.
So.
And Robert Parrish, the Chief, 00.
Yeah, the Chief, Robert Parrish. No, but that's, Greg Oster tag, a Duncanville guy. So right there, you've got the connection. I think that the number's already been claimed here in Dallas County. All right. So DeMarvian Overshown, if you want to get your zero jerseys, go ahead and get them. The 13s are probably on sale. Okay, so we're going to take a look at the three situations. Here are the three situations I have that I think would most upset Cowboys fans. You tell me if these are about right, Chop. Number one, the Cowboys draft Omarion Hampton, running back from North Carolina at pick 12. That generally seems to upset people. That would upset me. I don't think he's worthy of that pick. But that's one scenario. Number two.
That would be a... Look, if Luka is a 10 out of 10 anger, mm-hmm. this would be like a 8, 7.
Probably a 7. Yeah, because 6. At the end of the day, he's a skill position player. They'll probably, once they see him in training camp, it would lessen it a little
this
bit.
This won't be... Yeah, this would be not... This would not... I shouldn't seem... This would be a 5.
There are a lot of people in the draft community that have gotten Cowboys fans worked up about this guy, including Brian Broaddus. Brian Broaddus has, I think, made some people think, please don't, this is an awful situation. Georgia edge rusher Mykel Williams. There's a lot of people who just think that guy is not, there are not pass rushing traits there. That's just a run-stopping player. That's not going to work. And then the final one.
Now, to be fair, is this a Mike situation where he wasn't asked to do that at Georgia?
No, Mykel Williams was, he's just raw.
Okay.
He's still putting things together, and he was dealing with an ankle injury. We'll get into that stuff
here in just a second, man.
And then this would probably be more if you traded down or picked at 44 potentially if he slid, but it doesn't matter. If you picked him somewhere in the top 50, I'm sure Cowboys fans would not like it for one simple fact.
Michigan.
Kenneth Grant, defensive tackle from Michigan.
Okay.
And defensive linemen from Michigan are not acceptable to Cowboys fans. Which one do you want to start with?
If I were picking between the three of these, which one I would take at 12,
mm-hmm.
it'd be Mykel Williams.
Yeah, Mykel Williams is the guy. So let's start talking about Mykel Williams first. Mykel Williams is very raw. So some of the negatives that you're talking about there is he is not an elite pass rusher right now. There's a lot of inefficiency in the way that he rushes. He's not refined in terms of his pass rush plan. He doesn't have a lot of really strong technique. He doesn't set up tackles the right way. A lot of times he just sits there and dances for a little bit, tries to figure something out, and then he just goes, all right, I guess I'll just bull rush him. And that's not going to be effective at the next level. It wasn't effective all the time at Georgia. The numbers were not what you'd expect last year that they should have been as a pass rusher. Solid run defender, but just he's not there as a regular pass rusher coming off of the edge. And you've already got, you know, Marshawn Nealand that you drafted, that's a similar type of thing where it's good against the run right now. You hope that they can develop some of the pass rush tools. But here's the good about Mykel Williams that it would make sense for. The testing. And I've got Dane Brugler's Beast open right now where he has all the different testing that you can read there. Mykel Williams is 6'5", almost 270 pounds. He's got 34.5-inch arms, and he ran a 4.77. You're talking about a freakish athlete for that side of the ball. A really good athlete coming off of the edge. Really good bend. Really flexible guy. Like, you talk about the length, the power, the flexibility, the different things that he can do. That all, those traits are all there. The tools are there to put it together. You've just got to know what kind of a student is he. It's the same question to me that we had with Tyler Smith a couple years ago. Tyler Smith's a great athlete. Can he put it together?
Yeah.
Does he know how to, is he a good student? Can he take to coaching? Can he put his tools together? Right. That's the question with Mykel Williams. And I think everything we've learned about him and heard about him, the answer is yes, he can. And so I understand you're banking on somebody putting it together. Those oftentimes have bust potential, but he's somebody who I think the tea leaves, some of the evidence we have says he's a likely candidate to put some of those things together. I like Mykel Williams more than a lot of other people do, though.
I wouldn't mind him. I mean, I would rather the position over a Michigan guy, or just because the Cowboys have bad luck with Michigan, because Michigan players are fine. Just
other than Jordan Lewis.
Yeah, but again, like that was, I mean, it took a while with him.
He was always solid, I thought.
He was solid, but he never was like, he lived up to it early on.
As a third round corner,
better,
though.
I think he got better, yeah. Obviously, as a screw it up. Yeah, the Hampton, I mean, Hampton might have the most immediate impact.
Let's talk about Hampton. Hampton is...
He would have easily, I think, the most immediate impact.
The negative is easy. He's a running back at 12 who's not Ashton Jeanty. That's a negative. And he's probably not anywhere close to the 12th best player in the draft, you would think. The other aspect is he is not some quick, elusive type of player. So he's fast. He's not quick. He's not agile. He's not going to do a lot of different things laterally. He's not going to evade a bunch of blockers. He's not going to have a lot of, you know, really impressive juke moves or anything. He's a straight line runner typically in terms of his speed is good. It's in the 4.4s. at a 5'11", 220-pound back, that's good. You get that rolling downhill, that can be an imposing physical threat who can also pick up some speed, outrun some defenders. But there's not a lot of quick to the corner. There's not a lot of agility to wiggle through spaces. The wiggle's not quite there. But if you want to talk about physicality, some more juice, some like legitimate speed, a guy who can catch the ball, like do some different things for you, Omar Ian Hampton does bring that. So if that's a void that the Cowboys have, I would not love it at 12. But if you're just trying to say, what are the positives that they look at and say, that's a good player that we could use, it's easy to see why they think they could use that player. I just think prioritizing it at 12 would not make much sense for me.
If it was Genty, I would do it at 12.
Genty's worth it to me.
Genty at 12, I would do it. Hampton.
Genty to me is...
And that could be just my own, I don't know enough about him.
And we'll talk in depth about Ashton Genty tomorrow. Even though he's not going to get to the Cowboys, it doesn't look like.
Still Pierce 12.
But why I think if you get the unimaginable CeeDee Lamb type slide where then you're able to take him. I just want people to be prepared because I know there's some who just go, I won't take a running back at all. We'll talk tomorrow during Below the Belt about why Ashton Genty's different. And we'll have I'll have some tape cut-ups that we can put on the fan cam for it. But he is the standard. He's one of those type of players to me that when you watch him, he checks every box you look for. And then the last one here, Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle from Michigan. I understand it's a Michigan player. It's a guy who's a run defender first and is not really much of a pass rusher. He's still raw there.
Oh, so people will hate that.
Very Mozzie-like in that
They'll
sense.
They'll hate that.
The size is similar to Mozzie. So I understand people are going to go, Mozzie Smith, Mozzie. In fact, Kenneth Grant and Mykel Williams probably would remind a lot of people of Mozzie Smith and Taco Charlton.
The only people who like, if you go look around the league at the run-stopping defensive tackles, like you look on them when they're on other people's teams and you're like, man, we need one of those. And then you get one of those and you're like, God, this guy stinks, doesn't ever get the quarterback.
Well, so
that's what fans are.
So Mykel Williams, by the way, some people I've seen compare Taco to Mykel Williams because the size and different things like that and how he's raw and different things. Mykel Williams is a much more flexible, bendy athlete than Taco was. With Kenneth Grant, there are definitely similarities to Mozzie Smith in terms of the profile. I think Kenneth Grant has a better zeal for football. I think Grant is a better pass rushing tools naturally, showed more of that at times at Michigan than Mozzie did. So I think the projectability is a little bit easier. Understand why people would have that worry, though. He's also a more flexible player. He can play the three technique, which is the pass rushing type of defensive tackle over the guard's outside shoulder. That's the three technique. Or play the nose guard where he's playing more the run. But I would understand why they pick him. I would actually like Kenneth Grant if you could get him in the second round.
Okay. B-Low.
D-Belt.
105.3 The Fan. Adam Schefter. Brett Boone. All coming up at the 9 o'clock hour. We start with Schefty next on 105.3 The Fan.